My name is Malavika Prasad, and I'm the host of Your Favorite Book, a podcast all about asking that big question, what's your favorite book and why? I have no real credentials, I just really love books, and I love talking to writers and readers alike about the books that have really changed their lives. And folks, we got a big one today. I'm surprised it took so long to cover the internet's favorite book, but here we are. Finally, someone has chosen one of my all-time favorites, Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. And this isn't really one for intellectual rigor, I'm going to say that right up front. My guest and I just have a lot of fun with everything Austen, all of the lore adaptations, the characters, the quirks. It's just really a fangirl episode at the very least. And my guest this week is Casey Meserve. Casey is the host of Ents and Sensibility, a deep dive Jane Austen podcast that you definitely want to check out. So all right, let's dive in. I am so excited for this one. And I say that every week. I'm always excited, but I am especially excited today because I am getting to a book that I have a whole show. It's about your favorite book. And I don't know how it's taken me over a year of podcasting for someone to suggest this book. I'm dumbfounded because I always thought, like, I think Emily from Fuckboys of Lit worded it as the internet's favorite book. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I think it might just be the internet's favorite book. It's definitely the memer's favorite book. If you like memes, you've seen a Pride and Prejudice meme.
Absolutely. And the memes are great. I think SparkNotes Twitter has made their entire living off of Pride and Prejudice memes. So, but right. Yes, if you weren't aware, if you didn't see the title of this episode, we are talking about Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen, a book I am so excited to discuss. One I'm sure a lot of us have read before. And I'm wondering, you know, what new do we have to say about Pride and Prejudice? Maybe not a whole lot, but I think it's always fun talking about, and we're just going to have a good time with this episode today. But before we get to all of that, Casey, can you start off by telling us about your podcast and can you explain that title?
Sure. I love bad puns. And Sensibility came to me as a bad pun. I am a huge fan of J.R.R. Tolkien. Mm-hmm. Ents are the giant tree creatures from Lord of the Rings. And one day it just came to me, Ents and Sensibility, and it was a giant tree monster having tea with a lady. And I'm like, well, that's hilarious. I need to make a podcast about that.
I love that because I knew from talking to you, your first suggestion for this episode was Lord of the Rings, and I had to decline because I have a no series rule simply because I can't read a series for an episode with the number that I have. But it makes sense. It's a perfect marriage of those two universes. And so tell me specifically, you know, your podcast right now has a lot to do with Jane Austen, but can you elaborate that on that a little bit more?
With Ents and Sensibility, we're on episode 10 now. We're still exploring, still trying to figure out what future topics are going to be about. Right now, we're actually reading Ents and Sensibility, which was Austen's first published novel, but I also try to get into more of the world that Austen lived in, where her characters are coming from, and try to make it accessible, I guess, to a modern audience. And I think her books are really accessible. Mm-hmm. Once you get past some of the language barriers and some of the ideas that are existing in her novels, mm-hmm. they're love stories. And you know, that is such a universal concept. So I'm also trying to figure out more of how to work in some of the retellings that I see of Austen. There are some really amazing versions, retellings, or new plays off of Pride and Prejudice and Sense and Sensibility. You might have seen Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Yep.
But there are so many others out there.
There are.
And so I try to talk about those as well and some of the news that's going on with Jane Austen, because even today, there are still movies being made and new versions of Pride and Prejudice coming out and new versions of Emma coming out. So it's really amazing how much information is out there. And I really want to bring it out of the kind of English class. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm an English major. I love talking about books.
Me too.
I mean, obviously. Right. but I'm trying to bring it to an audience that maybe likes to read books, but isn't, you know, hasn't really delved into what some of the, what some ideas or themes really mean. So I try to bring it in and talk about those in plain language.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense, because you're right. Austen books are endlessly adaptable, which we're definitely going to talk about in film and other book versions. I mean, she's been made and remade over and over again. The stories are so relatable. You're right. They're love stories. They're family stories. They're comedies. It's things people can sink into. And you're right, even though the language can be a little intimidating, and although I have tips to get around that, and which we'll get to, I think that it's, even once you sort of get in the flow of it, it's a very, this book especially, is just a very entertaining, engaging story. And like, once you've sort of accustomed your ear to the language, it becomes a very smooth sail through the book.
It really is. It's an easy book to read. If you've ever been intimidated by the literature section of a bookstore or the library,
mm-hmm.
you grab Pride and Prejudice, and it not only is an easy read, but it sucks you in.
Mm-hmm.
Jane's just style of writing is so easy to read.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I love that you call her Jane. We're all on a first name basis with Jane Austen. I like that.
You know, we are. You can't do that with a lot of authors. Like Tolkien, everybody, all his fans call him the professor.
Yeah.
Vognett, everybody calls him Vognett. But Jane, it's Jane.
Jane. Because honestly, Jane Austen is one of those people I just would want to hang out with, because I just feel that her observations about the world around her really make her unique. You know, she sees her society for what it is. She finds humor in it. She finds real deep meaning in some of it. And I don't know, she seems like a blast to sit and have a cup of tea with.
I just want to hear what she mumbles under her breath.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've read some of her letters. She could be vicious, and I just want to be there for some of that too. And some of her, what some characters say about others. She had quite the mean streak.
Oh yes,
and it's really funny.
Oh yes. Oh my goodness. We're gonna touch on all of this stuff. But before I get to that, so. Tell, what is it about Jane Austen specifically that you think captivated you personally?
Oh, so the first time I read Jane Austen, I think I was about 19. I never read her in college. I never read her in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I was up late one night in bed watching TV, flipping channels, and the 1940 version of Pride and Prejudice was on PBS.
Mm.
So I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, this is a really sweet story. So I was at a bookstore a little while later and I saw it and I picked it up and I read it and I said, oh, that was really good. Ended up buying all of the other Jane Austen books that I could find, because that's what I did. And I think it really, I have pretty much read it every year since I was about 19. And I think what drew me to it is you can read it on so many different levels. When I was 19, reading it when I was 19 is so different than reading it now that I'm 40. Mm. Lizzie was a character that a 19-year-old could absolutely identify with.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm 40, Mrs. Bennett actually is someone I identify with.
Which, it's so funny because, like, Mrs. Bennett, if we take into account probably how young she was when she married and she has these five daughters, she's probably not even 40. She's probably barely 40 years old. And they make her, all the, like, film versions make her look like, I don't know, a really older woman, like in her 60s. And I'm like, no, Mrs. Bennett was probably like 40.
Yeah, maybe 45 tops.
Yeah.
You know, she was young. Mm-hmm. You know, they were young when they got married.
Right.
Back in, at this time.
Yes.
But it's just an accessible, funny book. And the more you read it, the more you pull out of it. On the top gloss, it's a romance story. It's very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Then you read it again, you're like, oh, this back and forth between Darcy and Lizzie is really nasty. And they're so quick. How are, you know, to be able to write that kind of dialogue is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just get into all the different characters and you can see how sharply drawn they are. And it's just, I think every time I've read it, I've been attracted to a different character. Not like, you know, psychologically attracted, mm-hmm. like sexually attracted, but like fascinated by them. They're just so interesting. Every time you read it, you learn something new, I think, about a different character.
Every single time. You were exactly right. And I haven't reread this book as often as you have, but I find it really interesting that you bring up that your introduction to this was a film version of the story. And I feel like this is one of the books where most people, probably the layperson, came to this through one of the film adaptations, maybe the 2005 or the BBC 1995 version, or any of the other Pride and Prejudice movies. For me, I think probably the 2005 movie was probably the first time I had really seen this. But actually, I take it back. When I was like 8 or 9, I had these illustrated classics that my parents bought me. And one of them was Pride and Prejudice. And I read that thing over so many times when I was like an elementary school student. And I look back at one of those and I was like, it preserves a decent amount of the original language to the point where I remembered like random exact sentences from the illustrated classics. And I was like, it really kind of took itself pretty seriously. It was a good way to sort of distill it down for kids, but there were drawings and things like that. And I really just got to know that story. And I don't think I read the actual text until I was in high school. But each time I've sort of found something different in the medium. And this time I found an audiobook. And the audiobook brought in like an even new dimension to this, which was great.
Oh, wow. I really want to actually read it in audiobook. So you might have to send me the... Let me know which version you read.
I actually, so this is the thing. So I picked up like my print version of Pride and Prejudice that I had, and I was just like having a hard time reading it on the page. There's something about the older I've gotten, the harder it is for me to just straight up read like older language. And I was like, I'm having a hard time getting into this right now. Let me find an audiobook. And I went to my library and I tried like 5 different ones and like none of the readers were working. And I was like, well, this lady just sounds too prim and proper. I don't like listening to it. Like this one's a like a movie version and I couldn't find the exact one. And then on YouTube, there's just a free YouTube version that is wonderfully read. And I'm like, yay for YouTube. The whole thing was up there and it was a joy. Shout out to Karen Savage. That's the name of the reader. She just kept introducing herself at the beginning of every paragraph. It's like, go you, Karen. You were great.
I'm going to have to look that one up because I would love to hear that.
Oh my God. She did Mr. Collins's voice in like the best way possible. It's like, my dear Lizzie. And it's like, oh goodness. I loved it.
Oh, that's him.
Yes.
That's so him. Oh, God.
Oh, gosh. I said this one is not as tightly organized. If you're a longtime listener of Your Favorite Book, you're probably used to a little more organization to all of this. But no, we're having fun. We're talking about whatever we want with this one. I'm not even going to give you all a plot summary because, okay, you probably know the plot of this book. Elizabeth Bennett, Darcy, first impressions gone wrong. A bunch of sisters, scandal, ballrooms. There you go. There's your plot summary. It's you know this story, but I think the first thing I want to ask you about is, what do you think has made this story, this particular one, endure as long as it has?
Oh God, I think it's just the simple story of misunderstanding. I think it comes down to that. It's a very simple book written by someone who was her second published novel, she was at the top of her game.
Mm-hmm.
The dialogue between Darcy and Elizabeth is so crackling.
Mm-hmm.
Every sentence they say to each other is just so, it's like a whiplash. It's so fast, and before you know it, you're just sucked into it. And I think that is what draws people in. And Elizabeth Bennet as a main character is just such a charming personality.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of a loudmouth fool in mm-hmm. a lot of ways. And I think, I mean, I identify with a loudmouth fool.
Sure. Me too.
she thinks she knows better than she actually does. She mm-hmm. only trusts her own judgment. And obviously that's going to get you in trouble at some point. And it does for her. Sorry to spoil it, but Lizzie's loud mouth gets her in trouble.
Yeah. Oh gosh. You know, this is the other thing. I always try to avoid spoilers in this book. If you need spoiler alerts for Pride and Prejudice, like, you're not getting them here. We're going to talk about every facet of this book down to the ending. And I've got some things to say about the ending, but I think you're totally right. She's such a relatable main character, and it's because she's flawed that she's so relatable. She's not this Mary Sue character. At times, she's judgmental. She jumps to conclusions. She's easily taken in by a first impression. She's so glowing over Wickham and, you know, assumes exactly what she hears when she wants to hear it. But at the same time, like, you can kind of tell why she's such a know-it-all, because compared to everyone else in her family, she probably has the best judgment.
Oh my, could you imagine having those sisters? Like, Jane, I love that Jane Austen named her sweetest, most gentle, most beautiful character after herself.
Yes. And Jane is great. I like Jane, even though I think, like, come on, Jane, have a backbone. Like, come on, Jane, no one's this nice. But you like Jane. Like, everyone knows, like, that one, like, sweet cinnamon roll of a person. Like, everyone knows that person.
She is. She's a cinnamon roll. But the sisters, it's just like, they're either trying too hard or they're just fluff.
Oh my God.
They're like cotton candy. They're so, oh.
The scene where they're in the ballroom and Elizabeth is just watching every single member of her family make a fool of themselves. Like, Mary singing her boring dirge song in her bad voice, like Kitty and Lydia, like flirting with everything that moves, like her mom talking so loudly about, look how rich they are. And then the dad just kind of laughing and not getting involved. And Elizabeth the whole time is like, what's wrong with my family? I feel like that kind of embarrassment, like, that's so relatable.
You can see her head just wanted to explode, but that wouldn't be proper, so she can't do that.
Right. And like, when she gets so upset at Darcy for being like, look how, like, nonsensical your family is. And it's like, only I can insult my family. You can't insult my family.
Yeah, seriously, that's family. It's like, I know that, but you don't have to point it out.
Right. It's all true and she knows it. But, oh gosh, I think speaking of the family, like, I'm going to ask you a controversial question. Who do you think is the worst member of the Bennet family?
Oh, you know, I used to love her dad, but I really think just every problem that the Bennet family runs into ends up being his fault. He could have put a stop to everything so quickly, because this is a patriarchal society. He could put mm-hmm. a stop to that. but he thinks it's too funny. He's having too good of a time watching his family embarrass themselves to stop them.
Yeah.
So I think he's the worst.
Yeah. You know, I was of the same opinion before. Like, I always liked, you know, the little banter between Lizzie and her father. And it's like, oh, he's the bookish dad who kind of just does his own thing. But it's like, no, in a society where you have five daughters whose reputations hang by a thread, like, you can't afford to just let them handle their own affairs and, like, let them kind of raise themselves. Like, the scene where Elizabeth is talking to Lady Catherine, who's a hoot and a half, was talking to Lady Catherine about how they had no governess, like no real upbringing, never went to town, all of that. And they were kind of like the ones who wanted to learn, learned, and then the others did it. And I'm like, what is this? Like, you have to actually care more about your family and be more invested. And it's like, he only realizes it after what happened to Lydia when he's like, oh no, I have to be a parent. Like,
by then they're all either adults or teenagers. It's kind of too late.
It's too late. It really is. And I was just like, Mr. Bennett, get it together. And even to Lizzie, like the scene where he reads the letter that talks about like Darcy's proposal or whatever, and he's just kind of laughing at it. And he's like, oh, who had ever thought this would be true? And he's just so oblivious to Lizzie's feelings, the one daughter he's supposed to care the most about. Like, I started picking all these things up and it's like, yeah, objectively speaking, there's so much wrong with Mr. Bennett, but I hate the mom more.
she's very easy.
She's easy to hate.
She's easy to hate. But at the same time, it's like, of course she's anxious. Of course she has nerves. She has no support from her husband. Her five daughters, if her husband dies first, she and her five daughters are out on their asses. They won't have any money. Her daughters have no prospects. Her whole life is literally getting those daughters married and settled, making sure that they're safe. So that, like in Emma, the I can't remember her name, but the old lady with her daughter who used to have a nice home, but now we're living in like some little apartment and living on very little money. She doesn't want that. Mrs. Bennett doesn't want that to happen to her daughters.
No, especially if you think about where Mrs. Bennett came from. It's constantly told us that Mrs. Bennett is not from a gentleman's family. Like, her family had professions. It's like, ooh, no, they dared to work. Oh, but like, they're working class people essentially in this society. And so she married up. And so for her, she wants better for her children. And that's understandable. The thing that makes me hate her though is like, when all of this is at stake, like, how do you not teach them the proper manners, the proper like decorum? How do you not behave in that way so much is at stake? That's what gets me about her.
Oh, I know. She's a lot like, I think Lizzie is a lot like her. Neither of them know when to shut their mouths.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell people this online, and it has angered a lot of people. Lizzie is much more like her mother than she thinks she is.
Yeah.
And in 20 years, she, you know, Darcy might be stuck in the library while Lizzie goes on about her poor nerves.
I hope not. I feel like that's probably what's going to happen to Lydia and Wickham, but
oh, they're not going to be in the library. They're just sad, those two.
And now we're going to get to them. I have a whole lot of things. But like that brings me right to it. I want to say that the character I probably hated the most is Lydia. Because even though I get it, she's like 15 years old, the fact that she just seems to have no remorse for what she put her family through.
She doesn't have a clue. And even if she had a clue, she couldn't care less because she got exactly what she wanted.
Mm-hmm. She's rude and selfish, and like when she talks, like you almost think she's a character out of a different book because she's just so direct and so like spiteful and vindictive, and she'll just be like, oh, he's ugly. We don't want any ugly people around us. And I'm like, what book am I reading? There's no like decorum or anything. I'm like, what are you saying, Lydia? And she's roping Kitty into it and all that. And I'm just like, I hate you the most, even though you get a pass for being like a kid and not knowing what you're doing. Like, you didn't have proper parenting. Like, I get it.
Yeah, it's, oh, she's just so, I think Wickham is probably the worst person. I think Wickham might be the worst of all of like the evil male characters in Austin. I think Wickham is the worst one.
Yeah. He's, yeah. I think she went straightforward Bond villain for Wickham pretty much.
He really is. He is just, he's just nasty. And he comes off as, it's like a Jekyll and Hyde type of character.
Oh, yeah.
He comes off as this really dashing, handsome man in his bright scarlet uniform.
Mm-hmm.
But he is just awful. He's a terrible, terrible person.
Absolutely. He is just, you know, he's just so two-faced, and he's like the picture of immorality in every sense. You know, he gambles, he leeches money, he's a liar, he's sexually improper in what he does with Lydia, running away with her with no intention to marry her.
And he did that with Darcy's sister too, which makes him even
like
worse.
Even younger. I'm like, dude, you are like, you need to stop with these like children. Leave. 15 is way too young to marry. I don't know what's going on in Austinian society, but if Lydia tells us anything, that is way too young to get married.
way too young. Like,
and I like how Elizabeth seems so mature by contrast, and she's like, I'm 20. And I'm like, I didn't know anything when I was 20. Like,
I know. Me too.
20 is like, I don't know, I was a sophomore in college. Like, what did I know? Nothing.
I don't know. Oh, 15 is just so, it's so ridiculous. And the way she just willingly goes off with whatever Wickham wants to do, it never really made sense to me until far longer, I think, than it should have, what Wickham's goal was in marrying Lydia. Because he knew that the Bennets didn't have any money, you know?
Exactly.
It's like, what are you doing, dude? You want money. That's why you went after Darcy's little sister. They don't have any money.
Yeah, he went after Darcy's little sister. He has that whole thing with that random Miss King who eventually leaves and she has money. And then eventually you go for no money at all. Like, you have no idea that Darcy's going to swoop in and give you a living after all this. Like, you're just messing around. Like, he had no intention to marry her. And he's so slimy and, ugh, I don't know. Yeah, I think that's the closest Jane Austen came to, like, a straightforward, no good side to this character villain.
Yeah, I agree. I think he is a truly terrible person. I think maybe there's one person in Mansfield Park that lives up to being as nasty and vindictive as Wickham. But other than that, I can't remember the character's name off the top of my head. Terrible Austin podcaster. But
I haven't even read Mansfield Park, don't worry. I've read 3 Austin books. I have read Persuasion, which was a previous episode on this show.
I listened to that one.
I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, I hope you liked it.
I did. It was wonderful.
And so we did, and then I've read Emma before. I actually read Emma for college, and then this one I've read multiple times, but I haven't gotten to some of the lesser known Austins yet, but I want to.
Oh, well, Mansfield Park is contentious. A lot of people don't like, a lot of people, it's their favorite. Mrs. Norris is that character up there with Wickham, who is just about the most terrible character you can think of.
Got it. I think the other thing I want to bring up about Pride and Prejudice is that, and this has been talked about obviously, but it's something that can't be neglected. This book is so funny. And it is funny on a line-by-line basis. You know, one of the reasons I really liked doing this one on audiobook is because it made me slow down and really pay attention to every line and, like, really relish in some of the witty humor and the jokes. One of these jokes is coming to my head, and I never noticed this before, but it's Caroline Bingley, who is her own special breed of evil. But Caroline Bingley is, like, trying to get Darcy's attention. So she picks up a book, and she's not reading it. And she's like, oh, I can't think of a better way to spend the afternoon than with a book. And then no one responds. So she just puts the book down and does something else. And I'm like, just little lines like that. Obviously, I didn't do it justice there, but they're so effortlessly written. And I don't know, there's just so much humor in this book, down to the farcical situations of the ballroom, to the witty banter between Darcy and Elizabeth. Like, everything's got some wit and humor, and sometimes it's almost laugh out loud funny at points.
It is one of the funniest books. I think Emma might be funnier just because of the situation. But it is, you're right, every line is something funny. It's whether or not it's just, like, the scene of, like, watching Mr. Collins make an ass of himself. and listening to, like, he's trying to recite some really doom and gloom religious text, and Lydia just interrupts him in the middle of it to talk about what her aunt is doing. It's so funny.
Mr. Collins, like, it obviously we know him as, like, this boring, buffoonish, obsequious kind of character, but there's a line in the book that, like, I thought was really bold of Jane Austen considering the time period she wrote in, and it's towards the end where Mr. Collins is writing these long letters that he writes. And he writes about how, you know, he's like, I can't believe you let Lydia back into your home, like, after what she's done. Like, I would have just considered her dead. And then, like, through Mr. Bennett, he's like, oh, I guess that's what he calls Christian forgiveness. And I'm like, Jane, like, for your time period, like, writing that in the text, that's a bold move.
And Jane was the daughter of a parson, which is Mr. Collins's job. So it's like, ooh, she was almost always on the side of a parson, but making fun of one like Mr. Collins, everything he says just seems to have written itself. It's just gold. And I think, I don't know, every writer, it feels like, would want just one line that they could write that is like something in Pride and Prejudice. And with Jane, it's just the entire book. It's
the whole book.
Everything. It's just so witty and so funny. And the satire is just wicked.
Another thing, yeah, it's so right. And like I said, when I was listening to this on audio, and I was having a chance to sort of really pace myself, I realized this book is, you know, a little long-winded. It's wordy. But it is very beautifully paced. Like, you can't take out large sections of this book. I used to think, like, I'm always someone who's like, when I see a long book, I'm like, I'm sure lots of this can be taken out. But all of it contributes to character or to pacing or to plot. Like, there's a purpose to all of it. Even when the letters run a little long or they're visiting yet another house or going to yet another ball, it all moves the story forward and moves the characters forward, and everything has a reason for being there. It's a well-plotted book, and I don't think it gets enough credit for that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I agree with you. Every sentence in this book needs to be there. A lot of people, I've heard people, you know, compare Jane Austen's writing with, like, men's writing and how many more words she'll use to say something that a man, like, a man might use, like, one or two words to say. But with Austen, this book is so tight. It's such a tightly written book that nothing could be deleted without taking something away from it. It's just such a, every word is so rich in meaning that you need it in order to have the entire understanding.
Absolutely. And it's such a simple story. Like, if you really think about it, like, obviously we have some subplots here and there, but it's really just a simple story of misunderstanding and, you know, coming to terms with one's pride and prejudice. But it's really focused on building these characters, building this world. This is world building for a lot of us. I mean, it's all universe we're not used to, but we're thrust into this society, and it all has a purpose here. But I will say this, I'm not saying this to be controversial. This book is overrated. I will say this book is overrated. And I say it because I don't think this book has to be overrated from how much lauding it gets even now. And Jane Austen's basically one of the only writers we know from her time period. And perhaps there's reason for that, but she kind of stands alone. And this book especially, like, if you've read anything from her canon, it's this book. But I wonder, like, I don't know if any one book warrants as much praise as this book has gotten.
I think this book gets the most attention because it's been the easiest to be, it's the easiest one to put on film because of mm-hmm. so much dialogue. And I think that's where it gets the most attention because it's been produced into a movie or a TV show or rewritten into other books so many times. Because it is easy to digest. It's easy to put on the screen. I don't know if it's overrated, but I think it's just been it's so much in our collective book list mm-hmm. that people just go to that one first.
Right, right.
And I don't think it's her best novel.
Mm-hmm.
I think Persuasions is her best novel.
Yeah, I think, you know, having read Persuasion recently for this show, Persuasion's definitely the more mature book. You know, it's the most, it was her last finished novel, and it showed a tremendous amount of growth, but it's not nearly as fun. This book is so much more fun, and I think that kind of elevates it in people's mind, because if you're going to get someone to read, like, a 17th, 19th century book, you want to have some fun with it.
Exactly. It is a fun book. It's funny. It is fast-paced, like, not fast-paced, like, there's a lot of action, mm-hmm. but it just keeps going right along.
It does. It doesn't waste time.
It doesn't waste time. It's not like some of these, like a postmodern book or a modernist tome that's, you know, 3 inches thick and
yep.
just never gets to the point.
Mm-hmm.
It gets to the point. You can read this book in a few nights. And yeah. this is one of my favorite books to fall asleep reading.
Absolutely. It's a comfort read. Like, this is a reread worthy book. It's a comfort. You're always going to find something new in it. And I adore this book. Even though I think, you know, on principle, it's overrated, doesn't mean I don't love it. I still love it just as much. But you brought up the movie adaptation. So that makes me want to ask you, what is your favorite film version of this book?
Oh, I saw the BBC version with Colin Firth and just fell in love with it. I have a bag from the Jane Austen Center in Bath that has I Heart Mr. Darcy on it, and it has a little picture of Colin Firth on it. He's my favorite Darcy. Everyone else is open to whichever Darcy they choose. But I love that version. The chemistry between the two, him and Jennifer L, is just so crackling the entire movie.
I'll admit it's been a while since I've seen the BBC version. I think it was, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago at this point. But I have a soft spot for the 2005 Keira Knightley version, probably because that was my first introduction to Pride and Prejudice. I've seen that movie so many times. It's a comfort watch for me. I think Keira Knightley is such an amazing Elizabeth. I think she just gives the character so much wit and personality. And I will venture to say this. The ending of the Keira Knightley movie is better than the ending of the actual book.
Hmm.
and I have an argument why.
Okay, well, let me hear your argument.
The actual book has a very neat sort of, this is where all the other characters ended up, sort of ending. Like, the last chapter is like, okay, Mrs. Bennet liked to visit her daughters at Netherfield and Pemberley often, and Mary stayed at home, and Lydia was always looking for money, and it was a nice sort of like, where are they now kind of epilogue. But then to me, it kind of abruptly stops, and we get very little of Elizabeth and Darcy after they're married. Versus in the 2005 movie, there is a lovely scene, which is not in the book, where the two of them are married and they're together. And Darcy asks Elizabeth, like, what should I call you? And she's like, you can call me Lizzie every day. And then, like, you can only call me Mrs. Darcy when you are blissfully happy. And then he calls her Mrs. Darcy. And I thought that was the most adorable scene. And I just feel like I just wanted a little moment like that at the end of just the two of them with a little more banter, like, show us what they are once they're married, versus just the pan over where are they all now, and then it just stops. But maybe that's just me.
Okay, I'm going to have to go watch that again.
I loved that last scene. I just really loved that. And I thought the two of them had, I can't even remember Darcy's name, Matthew something. But I loved
Matthew McFadden.
Matthew McFadden, thank you. And I liked the two of them together. And I also, I've kind of come around on the idea that adaptations don't have to have every single bit of the book in order to be faithful. So some people are purists and they love the 5-hour BBC. I'm thinking you can get the gist of something in a cinematic movie. And I thought that movie did that. So there's my hot take.
Well, that's a good one. I'll let you have that opinion. And it's your podcast.
I will also say that when I was younger, I really liked the Bollywood version of Pride and Prejudice, which is Bride and Prejudice. But having seen that relatively recently, it is an awful movie. It is terribly acted, but it's still pretty fun.
I haven't seen that one. I have read a couple Indian versions of Pride and Prejudice that are hilarious.
Yes. Unmarriageable. Have you read Unmarriageable?
I haven't read that. That is on my, that's in my, that's on Amazon for me right now. I have a huge list. That's one of them.
The retellings in print have been really, really good. Like, Unmarriageable was one of the ones I was thinking of. There's P&P and Zombies, like you mentioned. I don't know. Can you think of other ones that I'm missing?
There was one I just read called Pride, and I have to look up the author's name because I don't want to.
Yes, this one takes place in Brooklyn, I think, right?
It does. E.B. Zoboy. She is a wonderful author. Pride is basically a retelling. Elizabeth is named Zuri. She's Afro-Latina. She lives in a part of Brooklyn that is dealing with a lot of gentrification, and she is just this sparkling, witty, funny girl. And Darcy, whose name is Darcy, is the most arrogant, you know, he just comes off as so arrogant and so proud, but she never ever gives him that chance. And it's just so much fun to watch the two of them bounce off each other. And it makes you realize just how universal this story is. It can be told anywhere in any place with any characters. You could make a lesbian version. You could make a gay version. You could make a 14th century version. You can have dragons. You can have zombies.
Yes.
It works.
It's
every
a
time.
Perfect template. It really is. And a lot of Austin books have been made into so many different movies for a reason, like Emma and Clueless. Like, the blueprints are there. And I think that's probably why Austin has endured so long in society, because she's just made these really concise little plots that you can add your own context to and fill in and choose your own venture. And but it's still got that comfort that we'll all come back to. It's the best that romance has to offer, in my opinion.
I agree. There's so many people in the romance genre that wish that they could rewrite Pride and Prejudice, that Regency romance is actually its own subgenre of romance, because people are so obsessed with Jane Austen and Charlotte Bronte that they've just created this own little niche for themselves.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. But I don't know. I feel like I could talk about the details of Pride and Prejudice like over and over. I feel like that probably is its own podcast. If you have a dedicated Pride and Prejudice podcast, shout out to you, but I'm sure that exists. But there's just so much good information here. But in the interest of time, I want to turn this over to talking about other books and other recommendations. And so we talked about some Pride and Prejudice adaptations. So steering away from those, Casey, do you have another book, you know, maybe not exactly the same, or maybe just another book you really, really love that you'd recommend?
So I just read The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, which is by Anne Bronte.
Mm-hmm.
And it is only the second and final novel she ever wrote, but it is so beautiful and so well written. It's the story of a young woman who marries very young to a man who is a raging alcoholic.
Mm.
And it's about how it's written in a series of letters, and it is her story of how she gets away from him and finds true love.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an amazing story. It's very controversial. Anne Bronte's sisters didn't like it. Charlotte mm-hmm. Bronte hated it. She tried to suppress it after Anne died. But it is so raw and so visceral and emotional. In a lot of ways, it's kind of the exact opposite of an Austen story, because mm-hmm. Austen never deals with those really powerful emotion. She does, but it's in a very different way.
Yeah.
Whereas this is such a real thing that can happen, that it's very impactful, I think, to a modern audience. So that's one book that I would highly recommend to anyone who likes Austen.
That's a good recommendation, because as someone who has kind of a poor relationship with Bronte books, like, I'm not a Jane Eyre fan. I loathe Wuthering Heights. I hadn't read any Anne Bronte, but I've heard she's kind of the unsung hero of the three, and I want to check that out. I'm very intrigued by that. And I like how you kind of went the darker, more emotional route with this recommendation, because that was where I was going to. And the book I'd recommend, it's one I've talked about a few times on the show, a personal favorite of mine, and that's The Age of Innocence by Edith Wharton. And Edith Wharton, to me, is the, like, sarcastic, dark, like, the dark comedy sarcastic cousin to Jane Austen in how she approaches her world that she creates. Like, she also sees her world that she lives in from a bird's eye view. She's a lot more cynical in her picture of it, and the sarcasm's a lot more biting, and the stories are ultimately much more tragic. But it still has that sense of atmosphere of building in these societal expectations is just integral to the plot. And I don't know, you end up really feeling for some of these characters too. I think Ellen Olenska is a bold character for the time and just really stands on her own as a really memorable female character. I don't know. I have a lot. I was so pleasantly surprised by The Age of Innocence when I read it, and Edith Wharton has her own colorful past and was not the nicest person, but that book is stunning, in my opinion.
I'll have to read that one. I haven't read that one.
I also recommend that one on audio, because the prose is a little dense, but it translates very well to an audio version. That's my key to anyone who, if you are intimidated by older prose, or if it's been a while since you were in an English class and you just don't digest that prose the same way you did, find a really good audio version. It will breathe new life into those words for you.
I agree with you.
And so, Casey, before we wrap up, can you tell us, where can we find you and where can we find your show?
Sure. You can find Ends and Sensibility on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts. We're also on Amazon now.
Ooh.
I am on Twitter at entsandss.com. I mean, not .com. Sorry. I'm pretty current on Twitter at EnsignS, Instagram, Ensign Sensibility, Facebook, Ensign Sensibility, and I try to get a podcast episode up about once a month.
Casey, thank you so much for joining me today. You gave me the opportunity to talk about a beloved book, and you gave me an opportunity to reread it, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It made all my work commute so much better. And definitely everybody check out Ensign Sensibility. I checked it out myself, and I really like all the new spins you're bringing to Austin. I like that you're going chapter by chapter and really doing a deep dive. Like, that's something I wish I had time for on this show, but I really appreciate what you're doing there.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And thank you all for listening. This was an absolute joy to record. And if you'd like to follow the podcast, please follow us on Instagram and Twitter at YFB Podcast. Definitely rate and review if you can. I believe most of the major podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, have some sort of review function. So definitely drop us a 5-star. We really appreciate that. Oh, and update, next week will be our very first short story book club episode. As I've mentioned, we are reading The Waltz by Dorothy Parker. If you haven't read it yet, please do. It's probably less than 2,000 words. It's a couple single-spaced pages, really short story and a lot of fun. And I'll announce my guest for next week, who I've been hiding from all of you. It's a guest I mentioned on this show. It is Emily Edwards from Fuckboys of Lit. Emily, from our episode on Mother Night, is back to talk all things Dorothy Parker with us. And honestly, it's a wild ride. You definitely don't want to miss it. Well, that's all for now. Happy reading.